So something that I wondered about, and I haven't looked into this, so I don't know, but maybe you do. We as Christians, we have a lot of different interpretations of Scripture, especially when it comes to prophecy. Do you know if other religions, say like Orthodox Jew or Muslims, do they have that same issue? And if so, what are some of the different interpretations of other religious texts, say in the
Well,
Quran or Zohar?
I can only speak to a little bit of it, and again, I'll repeat that I'm certainly not an expert here. I'm trying to do as much reading on this as I can because it's fascinating to me now, but I don't want to misrepresent what anyone else believes. So I really can't address much in Jewish prophecy other than just in very broad, very simple terms. I've got a first grade understanding of what they believe. What I notice is that there are a lot of proclamations coming out about prophecies from scholars of the Zohar and Kabbalah going back generations, hundreds of years, where, for example, a rabbi who became known as the Vilna Gaon, or the genius of Vilna, which is the capital of Lithuania, from the 18th century, made a prophecy that when the Russians take Crimea and appear at the gates of Constantinople, then be prepared because the Messiah's arrival is imminent. Well, the Russians captured Crimea from Ukraine in the spring of 2014, March of 2014, and now they're fussing and fighting with Turkey because the Turks shot down that Russian plane on November 24th of last year. The Russians really haven't retaliated for that, but Russian soldiers are operating in and around Aleppo, leading forces loyal to the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad, while the Turks are busy shelling the Kurds in Syria in that same area. So there is a reasonable chance that the Turks and the Russians could go to war at some point, which of course, as a member state of NATO, should concern all of us in, North America and Western Europe, because we're bound by treaty to go to war with anybody who goes to war with one of us. So this could be ugly. But what I don't know, and I will admit this very openly as a disclaimer, I honestly don't know how influential Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox rabbis are in modern Israeli society. I mean, are they? And this was the question I asked, this friend in Jerusalem. Help me out here. I mean, because we're reporting on this stuff, but I don't want to represent that Israel in general is believing this. If these guys are considered fringe characters, like say Harold Camping was here in the United States when he put it that the world was going to end a couple of Octobers ago. So, to be honest, I really don't know. I just know that we're seeing proclamations almost every week of some other prophecy that will be fulfilled. In fact, just last week, a new one about a star that will appear in the east, surrounded by seven other stars, that'll wage war on the big star 3 times a day for 70 days before Messiah's arrival. Yeah, what does that mean? I have no idea. All I know is that that's not in the Bible, so I'm not waiting for that star to arise in the east. Now, among Muslims, there are some differences between key differences between Shia Muslims and Sunni Muslims. Sunnis, of course, are the predominant sect, but even within these sects of Islam, there are, well, denominations, for lack of a better term, different sects within that main division, and not all of them get along with one another. The one that seems to be causing the most trouble on the world stage right now are the Salafists, who are very conservative. They want to go back to living Islam the way Muhammad and the first few caliphs after Muhammad lived. And that's what the Islamic State is doing. That's essentially what ISIS is. They're partying like it's, 699. And so when Western political figures like Barack Obama or spokesman for his administration say the Islamic State is really appealing to people because, disaffected Muslim youth because they don't have jobs or poverty or whatever. No, there really are people out here who live according to their religious faith. It's just that their faith happens to teach that they shouldn't rest until the whole world has been converted or submits. And it's astonishing that this far into his life, I mean, having been raised as a Muslim. So either Barack Obama wasn't paying attention, just like he didn't pay attention for 20 years under Jeremiah Wright, or he's lying. But John Kerry went out to Hollywood on a secret trip about a week ago and met with movie studio executives to get ideas on how to counter the messaging of the Islamic State. Counter the messaging?
Jeez.
Look, The message is very simple. Muhammad laid it down 1,400 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's 1,400 years of Islamic doctrine and history from which he might draw a few useful conclusions about what motivates the Islamic State.
Yeah.
No, let's go talk to the guys from Warner Brothers and Disney and DreamWorks, and maybe they'll help us figure this out.
Yeah.
God help us. Anyway, the main difference is that Shias and Sunnis disagree as to who the rightful successor to Muhammad was.
Mm-hmm.
Shias believe that it was supposed to descend through Ali. And forgive me, I don't have this in front of me. And again, I'm no scholar by any stretch of the imagination. How does this play out in terms of their prophetic expectations? Shias believe that when the Mahdi appears, which contrary to what is being taught by some well-meaning Christian teachers, the Mahdi is not a supernatural being like the mm-hmm. The Messiah or you know the Antichrist. It's just a guy,
mm-hmm.
a mortal who is the rightly guided one, more like another Moses,
okay.
than an actual supernatural being. There have been a number throughout Islamic history, lots of self-proclaimed Mahdis. There was one in 1979 who led a coup against the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia that failed. There was a very popular uprising in Sudan in the 1860s by a fellow named Muhammad Ahmad. It was his story was kind of immortalized in the movie Khartoum from 1966. So there have been Mahdis throughout history that have had varying degrees of success. It's just that for Shias, the Mahdi will be reappearing. They expect the 12th Imam, who went into occultation in the 800s, and I should have the year in front of me, but I don't, to reappear.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like the legend of King Arthur.
Okay. You
know? He's not dead. He's just sleeping, waiting for a time when England needs him to come back and save the day. Well, that's kind of what Shias believe about the Mahdi. For Sunnis, the Mahdi will appear for the first time. So it's sort of like the difference between Christians and Jews. We believe when the Messiah appears, it'll be for the second time, mm-hmm. where Jews believe he'll be here, you know, for the first time. So that is a big difference. The other big difference between Sunnis and Shias is that Shias, contrary to what we're told in conservative media by the likes of Sean Hannity and others, in fact, this was also the argument being made by Benjamin Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm.
That Shias want to jumpstart the apocalypse, that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad,
mm-hmm.
who was the Iranian president, 10 years ago, that was his goal, was to try to commit some act of terror that would prompt the Mahdi to return, the 12th Imam to come out of occultation and lead them to glorious jihad. When you talk to scholars who've actually studied it, and again, I am not one,
mm-hmm.
but when you talk to scholars who've studied Islamic eschatology, that is not what Shias believe. They believe, like Christians, that there is nothing we can do to advance the onset of the end times.
Mm-hmm.
It will happen when, in their view, it will happen when Allah wills it to happen, and there is nothing that they can or should do to try to speed up the timetable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the argument, of course, was that they wanted to get a nuclear bomb so that they could destroy Israel. The fact is that according to Islamic eschatology, the city of Jerusalem is far more important than the cities of Mecca or Medina.
Oh, wow.
They believe Jerusalem is going to play a much more important role when the Mahdi returns, when Jesus returns, or Isa in their terminology.
Mm-hmm.
It will be in Israel, and also in Damascus. Damascus also plays a key role in Islamic eschatology. So Syria and Israel are more important to Muslims now, expecting the end times, than Mecca and Medina, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Which argues against the possibility that the Iranians that the Ayatollahs would want to turn the Dome of the Rock and the Dome of the Chain on the Temple Mount into radioactive dust, because that might prevent the Mahdi from returning and setting up the global caliphate or whatever. Besides which, and this was another argument, just from a pragmatic standpoint, the Ayatollahs have life pretty good right now. They've got nice cars, nice houses, wives, lots of money. And if the Mahdi appears or reappears for them, they might be out of work.
Yeah, Yeah.
Just like the Sanhedrin in Jesus' day didn't want the Messiah. They weren't really eager for the Messiah to show up because they had pretty cushy lives. So now the Sunnis, on the other hand, and this is an argument that scholar Dr. Timothy Furnish has been making for more than 10 years. He wrote an article in 2005 that kind of opened my eyes. And I was led to him by an article that appeared in The Atlantic magazine last spring called What Does ISIS Want?
Mm-hmm.
Journalist Graham Wood. And I think he made reference to Dr. Furnish in that article. But anyway, it was through reading that article about what their eschatological expectations are that I was led to his work. He points out that the most dangerous thing, and he was saying this in 2005, 10 years before ISIS declared its caliphate, that yes, violent jihad is a threat to world security and a threat to, you know, Western interests, a threat to Israel. But what's worse is violent Mahdism. And that's what he points out, that there are these Mahdist movements that have taken place throughout Islamic history that generally get really violent. And because the Mahdi, the rightly guided one, is free to interpret Islamic scripture in any way he wants because he's got the authority to do it, anything goes. Mustard gas, no problem.
Wow.
Chlorine gas, no problem. Nuclear, tactical nukes, no problem. Yeah, it's all for Allah, so it's all good. Mm. And they do believe that they can prompt a war with the West that will culminate in a climactic battle at which Jesus will appear and lead the forces to victory. The Mahdi will eventually appear, lead them to global jihad, global victorious jihad. And their view is the one that is obviously what ISIS is following. They do think they can jumpstart the apocalypse, and that is why they are so dangerous and why it's so maddening listening to Western politicians say, well, we try to figure out their messaging. We understand their use of social media. How do we counter their use of social media? Well, I don't know. I get a clue.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, again, you know, not educated well on what the Jews believe about end times prophecy, other than the expectation of Messiah ben Joseph, followed by Messiah ben David. Muslims, again, there are plenty of hadiths out there, and not all of them are consistent with one another. So it depends on how they interpret things. But roughly speaking, Sunnis looking for the Mahdi's appearance and believe that they can speed up the timetable on which he appears. Shias looking for the 12th Imam to reappear. He's the Mahdi, but he will appear only when Allah wills it. That's kind of how it goes. But now, having said that, it appears that there are even differences within the Islamic State as to what those hadiths mean that point to a climactic battle against Rome.
Oh, wow.
The battle supposedly will take place at the town of Dabiq. I thought it was Dabiq, but I was corrected. It's actually Dabiq, which is near Aleppo, where all this fighting is taking place right now between the Kurds, the Islamic State, Syria, Hezbollah, Iran, Russia. You know, it's a mishmash of fighters in there. Jabhat al-Nusra. This little town of Dabiq is only 20 or 30 miles away. But supposedly, Muhammad said in one of the hadiths that this would be the site of that climactic battle. Mm. Now, remember that when Muhammad lived, which was in the latter part of the 6th and early part of the 7th century, Rome wasn't Rome as we remember it. By then, the Western Roman Empire was 300 years dead, basically. The Eastern Roman Empire was Byzantium.
Mm-hmm.
That is very possibly who or what Muhammad was thinking of, assuming he actually uttered this hadith that was recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean when he says Rome, he really means Turkey? Because Constantinople was the seat of the Eastern Roman Empire, Byzantium, which is now, you know, Istanbul.
Right.
So is that who he means? Or, as some others speculate, do they mean Christendom?
Mm-hmm.
Do they mean, you know, Rome in the sense of the allegedly Christian nations of the West?
Right.
Don't know. So there is speculation. They're not even in full agreement themselves. And that fellow I mentioned, Graham Wood of The Atlantic, basically recruiters living in the West. He's not actually going to like Raqqa in Syria and you're not likely to get out of there alive.
Right.
But talking to them and just asking them, you know, what does this mean? And to them, Rome may have a very different meaning than what we assume.